Hello, and welcome to the Beverage Chronicles radio show. I'm your host, Gary Monteroso, and you're tuned in to the show that explores the fascinating world of drinks. From your morning cup of joe to that perfect evening cocktail and everything in between. Whether you're a coffee connoisseur, a craft beer enthusiast, a wine lover, or someone who gets excited about the latest trend in drinks, this is your weekly deep dive into the stories, science, and culture behind the beverages that fuel our lives and bring us together. Today on Beverage Chronicles, we're going to offer a few tips to ensure you are buying your beer as fresh as possible with a special report from Vince Douglas. Our cocktail specialist, Mike Vanderhorn, will stop by with info on a drink you may want to try. And our co-host, Michelle Lamb, will check in as well. So grab your favorite beverage, whether it's steaming hot, ice cold, bubbly, or smooth, and settle in. And let's begin another journey through Beverage Chronicles, because every drink has a story, and we're here to tell it. Today, I'd like to share some thoughts on why you should reconsider before purchasing unrefrigerated beer. Choosing the right brew for a backyard barbecue or just a casual get-together is a top priority for many of us. When you visit the store to buy your beer, you'll notice that a lot of it is displayed on the shelves rather than kept in the fridge, often at attractive sale prices. Those shiny cardboard packs of 18 and 30 cans of inexpensive beer might catch your eye, but the bargain may not be as good as it seems. You see, beers stored at temperatures exceeding 38 degrees Fahrenheit are susceptible to oxidation, which can lead to off flavors and a decrease in carbonation. Therefore, we suggest you always select beer from the refrigerated section of your local grocery or liquor store. The beer's shelf life is significantly affected, and who knows how long those beers have been left out. Although, as we sometimes mention, it's a myth that room temperature skunks a beer. That discontinued pack might have saved you a few bucks, but it could also mean sacrificing some delightful flavors. If you're a fan of craft beers, it's even more crucial to keep them chilled. Many craft breweries don't pasteurize their beers like the larger manufacturers do. While many brewers believe this helps maintain a fresher taste, it also means that the beer is more likely to lose its flavor if not stored correctly and has a shorter shelf life. Now let's hear from Vince Douglas as he shares his insights on how to determine if your beer has spoiled. Vince?
Thanks, Gary. The biggest problem you'll run into with beer kept in a warm spot is oxidation. We definitely need oxygen to live, but it sure can mess up our favorite drinks. Every beer will oxidize, even if it's still in an unopened bottle or can. That's because there's a tiny bit of oxygen trapped inside during the packaging. Keeping beer at room temperature speeds up that oxidation. You can tell if your beer is oxidized by noticing the smell and taste. The hoppy scent in an IPA will disappear, and the malt flavor will shift from crisp and clean to musty, grainy, and even cardboard-like. No thanks. If your beer tastes flat and papery, you've unfortunately got oxidized beer on your hands. I'd hate for y'all to waste your hard-earned money on bad beer. So here are a few tips to help you get a fresh, tasty product. You can always ask the store clerks when your favorite beer is delivered, and then grab it on that day. As a former liquor and wine store clerk, I can tell you that it's totally fine to ask. You might also want to buy beer straight from a local brewery. The beer will be fresh, and they often have special releases that you won't find anywhere else. With well over 9,000 craft breweries in the U.S., you should be able to find one nearby that sells a brew you love. I'm Vince Douglas for Beverage Chronicles. See you next time.
Let's face it, the price of drinks is not inexpensive and seems to be going up all the time, so you want to make sure that you're buying the freshest beer possible. Now let's move on to our cocktail specialist, Mike Vanderhorn. Okay, Mike, it's yours.
Hey y'all, Mike Vanderhorn here to talk a little bit about the last of the classic stirred cocktail templates, the Negroni. The classic Italian equal parts cocktail is made with gin, sweet or Rosso vermouth, and the bittersweet and divisive Campari aperitivo. But this recipe evolved from the Americano, a blend of sweet vermouth and Campari with soda water, which evolved from the Milano Torino, which was named for the origins of each ingredient. Campari in Milan, Rosso vermouth in Turin. The story goes that the Milano Torino dates back to the 1860s at Cafe Camparino in Milan, which was owned by Gaspare Campari, where American tourists were traveling more frequently, and thus the drink was renamed to the Americano because Americans liked it? Classic. The story continues that in 1919, the now infamous Count Camillo Negroni, a regular at Cassoni Bar in Florence, wanted the flavors of the Americano but with a bit more bite. Bartender Fosco Scarzelli responded by subbing out the soda water for gin. This became the Count's usual order, and others began ordering one of the Count Negroni drinks. Eventually, this was shortened to just Negroni. This romantic story has been bitterly debated, and many weighing in on the origin being different people or even places as far-flung as Africa. The late, great Gaz Regan, in his book The Joy of Mixology, states that the first printed recipe with the name that he could find was in the UK BG Guide to Drinks in 1955, put together by the UK Bartenders Guild. Difford's Guide places a recipe from Sanfuelo Brucart's 1949 book El Bar Evolucion e Art del Cocktail as 1/4 part gin, 1/4 part vermouth, and 1/2 part Campari. Even further, sans the actual name, Simon Difford himself finds a reference in the equal parts recipe called Campari Mixte in L'Heure de Cocktail, published in 1929. As with all drinks history, we have to remember everyone was drinking when they were recording history, and so sometimes we don't even know. We don't know where all this stuff comes from, but the stories are great. So as far as the Negroni as the cocktail we know it as today, it has become a template like other classic cocktails, and to me this might be the most riffed cocktail in the world, with countless variations using different spirits, aromatized wines, Amari, and even such variations as the white Negroni that follow the 1-1-1 ratio but use gentian liqueur and blanc vermouth paired with gin. When is a Negroni no longer a Negroni? Well, post your cocktails to the R Cocktails subreddit, call it a Negroni, and boy, will that group tell you. Some of you may remember the Negroni Spagliato with Prosecco craze when Game of Thrones actress Emma Darcy went viral talking about her favorite cocktails. Spagliato translates to mistake. The story goes that a bartender mistakenly added Prosecco instead of gin to the cocktail, and thus, the Spagliato was born. I don't know about you, but I don't think in a million years I could mistake a bottle of Prosecco for a bottle of gin when mixing, but alas, what is a good cocktail without a good story? In the end, we all have our preferences, and I like to up the gin or other spirit in a Negroni to make it a 1.5-1-1 ratio, stir it in a mixing glass, strain over a large cube, and spritz with orange oil. Equal parts is still delightful, but there are as many people that drink Negronis as there are opinions about them, so make it how you like it. And if you've never tried one and aren't afraid of a little bitterness, this is your sign to try it. And if you want to channel a little Gaz Regan, you could go ahead and build it in the glass and stir with your finger, as he was infamous to be known to do at many a function. I wouldn't do that as a bartender at your bar, though. That's, most people would probably get grossed out by that. If you have any Negroni-related questions and want to reach out, you can always find me at Cocktail Complex on Instagram, and I'd be happy to talk about Negronis with you. They're one of my favorite cocktails and one of my favorite templates. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
And that was Mike Vanderhorn, one of our newest additions to our team here at Beverage Chronicles. Now let's move over to our co-host, Michelle Lamb, CEO of Brooklyn Night Media.
Hi, I'm Michelle Lamb, the CEO of Brooklyn Night Media. And today on Beverage Chronicles, I'm sharing my top 3 PR tips for marketing beverages. Let's kick off with: public relations impacts spirits brands, focusing on how PR strategies will shape and elevate. Number one, build building brand awareness through strategic campaigns. For example, use media placements, influencer collaborations, and product launch events to generate buzz for your spirits brand. Ask yourself, how can my PR efforts ensure my brand stands out in a crowded market? Number two, establishing credibility in the spirits industry. For example, highlight awards, certifications, and partnerships with respected organizations in press materials. Ask yourself, what achievements or recognitions can I leverage to build trust with my audience? Number three, driving engagement with creative consumer campaigns. For example, host social media contests, virtual tastings, or interactive cocktail making sessions to connect with your audience. Ask yourself, what types of campaigns will encourage my audience to engage and share their experiences? Well, that's all for today. Until next time, for additional public relations tips, you can find me on www.brooklynnightmedia.com. We are also on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time on Beverage Chronicles, have a great day.
I want to close out today's show with another tip, I guess, when you're purchasing beer. The question comes up, does beer on tap really taste better than in a bottle or a can? This is a hot topic among food lovers and beer fans. Some people, including the late Anthony Bourdain, prefer not to overthink their drinks. Most people have a strong opinion, though, on whether tap beer or bottled beer is superior. Personal taste is a big factor in these opinions, but technically, one option is definitely better than the other. One beer critic, mentioned beer on tap should taste better. That's basically the whole idea. If the lines are clean and the keg is fresh, you're getting the beer just as the brewer intended. Cold, carbonated, unoxidized, and shielded from light. However, this critic also pointed out that many people still enjoy certain beers from a bottle or a can. And he said, a lot of our bar patrons, myself included, have specific beers they like in a bottle. Bottled beer definitely has its place. Just like learning to appreciate a beer flavor that you initially disliked, switching from bottles to kegs, or the other way around, can be tough for those of us who have our beer drinking habits. Plus, even though tap beer is usually a better quality than bottled beer, it doesn't always win. In fact, tap beer can sometimes taste worse than bottled beer due to one major issue, and that's dirty draft lines. If the tube that carries the beer from the keg to the tap isn't in good condition, customers might end up having a bad drinking experience. Even great beer can taste off if the draft system isn't clean. You'll get sour notes or buttery notes and a strange funk that shouldn't be there. Clean lines are a must. Beer bottles or cans pose challenges of their own. Aside from not storing your bottled beer in a warm place, you should also make sure it isn't exposed to direct light. Now, of course, cans certainly do a better job at protecting beer from light. There's no question about that. That's one of many reasons why you're seeing so many breweries turning to cans instead of bottles. Light-struck beer is a real thing. UV or ultraviolet rays react with hop compounds and create a nasty, skunky aroma. Think of wet cardboard meets the high school bus stop. Kegs have the advantage in this department. Kegs are usually hold up better over time, mainly because they're sealed up tighter and protected from light and oxygen. Okay, that's it for this week's episode of Beverage Chronicles. As always, we thank you for joining us. I'm Gary Monteroso. My co-host is Michelle Lamb. And, of course, we have our full team of contributors who you can find by going to our website at www.beveragechronicles.com. Gary Monteroso saying we will see you next week. Take care, everyone.